89.1 FM, Lakeshore Public Radio. WLPR FM, Lowell.
Good evening, and thank you for supporting NPR Radio. This is Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM on the dial and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Forgot where I was at there for a moment. This is Midwest Beats. I'm Tom Lounges, and tonight we're going to be talking about a special show that's coming to the Acorn Theater. Joseph Mojo Morganfield, the Mannish Boys, will be there, and a special guest, Stephanie Daisy. Stephanie has brought Matt along. We're going to get to meet both of them. And in just a few minutes, they'll be playing some music and telling us all about the show coming up, as well as their full-time band. Cool name. We'll find out more about it. It's after your headlines, right here on Lakeshore Public Radio. Good evening and welcome to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM on the dial and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. And this is Midwest Beat. As you know, this time of the evening, we turn it over to music and the people who make it. That's what this show is all about. And tonight we've got some special guests, first-time guests here at Lakeshore. Joining me will be Stephanie Daisy as well as Matt Vitale, and they are members of, what's that band?
The Sex Robot Divas.
The Sex Robot Divas. Now, that in itself begs to have you explain the name, but we're going to get to that in a minute. You're here tonight to talk about a solo show that you're doing. Well, now it's a duo show because Matt's going to join you, and that's happening this Saturday, July 13th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, just across the state line at the Acorn in Three Oaks. You'll be sharing the stage with Joseph Morganfield, Mojo Morganfield, as he likes to be called, and the Mannish Boys. He is the youngest son of Muddy Waters, and I know you love the blues because I remember hearing you sing some blues. Now, the show you're bringing to the Acorn, what exactly is your stuff? Will it be blues, rock, a combination?
I feel like it will definitely be a combination of blues, rock, and actually two of them, you could slightly hear a little bit of country in them as well.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's cool, because country and blues are very related.
Yes.
In so many ways.
Yes, they are.
So do you have original songs that are out there? And let's talk with that first. Do you have original songs that are out there people can access, like right now if they're on their computer or on their phone?
Yes, you can find a few of them on our Facebook page, the Sex Robot Divas. You also can find a few on YouTube. We are also known as SRD because YouTube definitely likes to kick us off every time I post a song.
It's that name.
Then I have to go through this process to get the song back on. So there's a lot of times that we'll go by SRD, mm-hmm. And people like to advertise that, especially for family purposes. But you can find it on YouTube and our Facebook page.
So that brings me to the name again. If it's causing grief, then why have that name? What's the story behind it? It's definitely unique.
Well, the story of it is, it's probably not as exciting as people would wish, but when we were trying to come up with a name for the band, we went through like 400 names, you know, mm-hmm. emailing back and forth, voting, whittling them down. And, you know, I kept coming up with names that I, you know, wanted to be rejected just because they were so terrible. So
okay.
I came up with Eugene Rock and the Sex Robot Divas. And, you know, nobody liked it, but I started to label all of our practice recordings under that name, mostly to try to convince them, like, hey,
to come up with an idea,
a name. Yeah. And, but some people kind of thought that it was edgy enough and catchy enough that it would, you know, cause people to remember us, mm-hmm. you know. And so we eventually just adopted it, and it did that. We've had several circumstances where people only stopped online to listen to what was posted because of the name.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have stopped. And, you know, so I guess it serves us in that sense. Of course, it's hard to get it on the marquee
right.
of places we play. So, you know, there's
it's
that.
It's a catch too. 22
it
in a way.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So, how long has it been Sex Robot Divas?
We're going on 3 years.
Yeah.
Well, for us,
yeah.
3 years.
We started out with a different group of members, and it slowly evolved to where we are now. So, you know, probably 4 years total.
Mm-hmm.
operating under this name, starting from scratch, writing new songs. And of course, when Stephanie joined us, she brought a number of songs she had written before meeting us to the table. And then we've collaborated on songwriting since then.
Now, you guys are based out of South Bend. What is your geographical gig market, if you will?
I would have to put us, as of right now, we've done South Bend, we went to Highland, Indiana, we've ventured out to Acorn Theater as well, so I would have to say, like, the very top between Indiana and Michigan in that general area, mm-hmm. right at the borderline of the state.
We don't get very many gigs in South Bend because there's not a huge market for original music.
And know? That's what you do, originals.
Yeah, yeah, we don't do
well,
any
good
covers.
For you.
So, we'll just, probably pick a few up soon.
Okay. Just please don't do Brown Eyed Girl.
that will never happen.
That is my pet peeve. Every band I go into a bar, it's like they do that song within three songs of me walking in. Yeah. It follows me. It haunts me. So how would you describe the music? I know you're going to play some stuff live, some original stuff, but you're on an acoustic tonight, and you are a full-fledged band. I mean, it's a full electric band. So tell me what people can expect if they see the robots up there on the marquee.
So that's a great question. That's another reason why it's kind of hard to market us, because we kind of are all over the place. So you could find a song that could be very bluesish sounding with jazzish. You could also find some songs that are very 90s grunge rock. Like, we have some hard songs that
To me, the
really
name
kind
of alludes to that. That reminds me of a grungy kind of heavy band. Mm-hmm. You know, it just sounds kind of heavy to me. I wouldn't expect country or blues.
And we have a few songs that you would find in the movie. What is that movie? Brother Four Eye.
Where Art Thou?
Yes.
So we have a couple songs that are like that too.
Right.
So like we have, but I'd have to say if you could take a little bit of blues and take some rock and just like, it would be us.
I mean, I derive my songwriting, you know, kind of influences from Black Sabbath and the Grateful Dead. Mm-hmm.
That's quite a spread there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I can hear where the folk elements come in from the Dead. They did a lot of mandolins, things like that. But Sabbath, they invented sludge metal.
Yes, yeah, the riff rock. Yeah,
yeah, that's pretty broad.
And then some of the music that you'll hear from us tonight is, they're actually the ones I wrote. Like, it's not like a collaboration, so you might not hear some
as
of that.
As much of that?
Yes.
Because
at first... Because
you're not a Sabbath fan.
No, I'm grateful to have thought I listened to you.
She does like Alice in Chains.
So. Okay.
I do love Alice in Chains, though. William Duvall.
That's wild. So 3 years together, the band's been together 3 years, because that's when you guys got together.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it together in an incarnation prior to that? Did you have it, Matt, before you met Stephanie?
Yeah, we had it for about a year after that, and you know, I convinced some guys, you know, like, hey, I want to write songs and perform them, and if you know, we've done
this
before.
So you were a cover band before that?
I've never been a cover
band.
I had a previous band that was all original called Big Papa and the Wayward Children, and that was back in the 90s, the mid 90s, and we had a measure of success, but we had personality conflicts, and that ended, you know. And so I stopped playing guitar for a number of years, and then when I wanted to form another band, I wanted to do all original music, and it's really hard to find musicians that share that vision. So I convinced some guys to do so under the idea that, look, once we'll hit a stage, if you don't feel it when we play our original music and the crowd responds, then I get it, you know, and not everybody felt it. So we, you know, kind of took a break, and I looked to reform, and this is
the lineup that came together 3 years ago then.
Yeah, yeah.
You finally found the right chemistry.
This is the
My boss did, actually. She was like, you should go play music with my family. I said, well, I'm not a cover girl. And she goes, well, they don't play covers either. So it took me about 3 weeks to finally blow them off a couple times. And then I finally went
so
down to
So you were
the
persistent,
basement.
Matt?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So what was the audition like? How did you hear her sing? Were there demos out there, or how did you...
Actually, we had tried a number of different vocalists, and doing the audition is hard, actually. You know, do you invite, you know, the young lady to your house, you know, and do you want them to feel comfortable,
basement.
You know, like, you know...
It's dark and creepy.
Yeah, so...
Don't mind the mirror ball.
Our Troy, he's in the band as well, my cousin Troy. He met Stephanie in public, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That way they could kind of get to know her, and then we, you know, kind of talked her into coming down to the basement and performing for us. And when she did, we were instantly blown away by just her original material and her performance, you know, just in front of us with just a piano and her voice. So,
what was your take on them when they brought you down to the basement?
I mean, personality wise, they were great. And then when I came back, it was probably like the third time because I wanted to give it a chance just because mm-hmm. I felt empty as a solo artist. And
so you had been performing solo? Piano and a voice?
I did. Okay. Yeah, I did.
Tori Amos style?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then when you heard other instruments collaborate together on the music you write, there was no turning back. So it was amazing. Actually, it was one of the most amazing feelings I've ever felt. So I probably would never go back to being a solo artist ever again.
Unless you come to the record bin.
Correct.
And if you don't understand that, listeners, as you know, I own a record store, and we were hosting every Sunday free music in the afternoon, which will continue again in September. But we had an open mic, and Stephanie wandered in one day with a keyboard on her back and sat down and sang some songs, and that's why you're here today, because yeah. I was so impressed, and you really said you weren't really prepared for that, but you did it, and you won everyone yeah. in the room over.
It was nice. Actually, Tony Ortega actually was mm-hmm. the one that told me about it. And he's like, you should really come check this place out. And so
I'm glad you did.
Mm-hmm.
So you
too.
Experienced what we did.
Right. When, right.
Yeah.
You know, we had no idea what to expect. She set up this little keyboard, and here's this girl. She sits down. We're expecting some kind of Joni Mitchell thing. And she just lets out with this Janis Joplin-esque kind of body, full-bodied sound. And on that note, you have a guitar.
Yeah.
Let's play something. Again, we are listening. You are listening, rather, to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. And this is the Midwest Beat Show. I'm Tom Lounges. And my guests is Matt and Stephanie of the Sex Robot Divas. They are going to strip down here, musically speaking, keep your mind out of the gutter, and play a little riff. What do we got here? What are we going to do?
This is a recent song that I had written. It's called The Worth of a Good Man.
Oh, you did this one mm-hmm. at the record store. Mm-hmm. I like this one.
I played it on the piano, but he's going to accompany me today on all the three songs that we do. So.
Everyone can tell by the way you look at me, how you say my name so gracefully. You show strength in every step you take, providing balance when everything starts to break. And I hear every word you say. I just need you to listen and please understand. I know the words of a good man. My father, he taught me with my mother. Then he passed it down to my brother. I get to raise one every day. And those are just three reasons I'm here to stay. And I hear every word you say. I just need you to listen and please understand. I know the worth of a good man. You taught me these impossible all of the rest. And most of all, how it feels to have a good man by my side. Man by my side, and I know who. Please listen how it feels. Ooh, I know the world.
Awesome. Sounds even better than it did in the store. Great stuff. That is an original you wrote.
Correct.
Before you joined the band. Correct?
No, actually, no? I just wrote that last year, around October-ish.
Is there a story behind that one?
Yeah.
Oh, Matt smiles, says, oh, yeah, there is.
Well, so I actually, there is a story. So, and it's actually kind of wraps around politics in a way.
Okay.
So what happened was, is in 2018, we had a lot of situations in the media that started to separate women and men and, you know, do some separation because of certain things, you know, division. The judge, correct. And so there was a part of me that wanted to take a moment just to say that, you know, a lot of women, we depend on our men to be the backbone, but in my eyes, like, they need to hear it too. Mm-hmm. And we need to make sure that we stay in sync with each other. And just because we depend on a man for our backbone, because they, you know, men resemble the strength and the power, that kind of thing, and the generation sometimes, it's, I just felt like it was necessary to say, hey, like, I hear you, like, you're doing a phenomenal job. And
cool.
I know the worth of a good man.
So. Well, on behalf of all men everywhere, thank you.
You're welcome.
We appreciate that, don't we, Matt?
The song was definitely not about anyone particularly. Okay. It was really, that was the reason why I wrote it.
Like a social commentary.
Mm-hmm.
Before things got carried away too far.
Yeah.
All right. So you wrote that basically on your own. Do you bring a finished song to the band? Matt, how does that work? When she brings something to you, do you feel the need to add to it? Are there times when it's perfect as is?
There are absolutely times when there is nothing that we can do that other than to try to stick our finger in something that's already done. You know?
Okay.
And then there are other times where, you know, we say, hey, what about this? Or maybe if we, you know, have a hard break here and get heavy here, or bring it down, bring it up, you know, add a chord change,
mm-hmm.
you know, change, you know, some chords from some, you know, regular chords to sevenths or 13ths or something like that, that it has a specific effect on the way she feels about it and in a positive way. So it happens every way. I mean, I try to not have limitations on the way a song comes together. You know, you know, it's hard to get a good song.
Right.
And so you don't want to have, you know, rules about it other than whatever we got to do to make it good, you know. So, but she definitely brings material that doesn't really need touched as far as changes and words or anything like that. And we just, you know, we just play behind her. We just accompany her sometimes, yeah.
Okay. What do you think of, like, Matt's style of writing? And do you ever collaborate together? Are your styles
yes.
so uniquely apart that you don't? Or how does that work?
We definitely collaborate together. The first, like, year and a half, I would have to say even maybe 2 years, it was really, like, we took my songs, we took their songs, and we just, like, clashed, like, put them together. And then, like, this past year is where we, like, write together. And, like, they'll come, like, recently we had a song. It's called Imperfections. One day I missed practice, and they came up with this awesome beat, and I loved it so much, and I went on a travel. I go to Burning Man every year, and I went on a travel, and I always bring my paper with me, and I wrote lyrics to it. So, like, I wrote the lyrics, but they wrote the music, and it was, like, perfect together.
Are you primarily a lyricist? Do you consider yourself more of a lyricist, or do you write music primarily first? Which is there a way?
It's both.
Okay.
It's both. Like, sometimes I'll have lyrics just sitting around forever, and then sometimes I can have music just sitting around forever. And it just depends on how I feel.
Okay. And you write on piano, right?
I'm a woman. It depends on how I feel, Tom.
And you write on piano?
Correct.
And Matt, you write on guitar or piano?
I do a number of things. I mean, I don't try to write the songs on the guitar. I try to write lyrics. So I have a book of, 20, 30 different pieces of lyric that I'm writing simultaneously. And then, our band is very improvisational. So we improvise music, and, you get to something and you're like, okay, whatever we just did was really cool. Let's use that for something. Let's go through the lyric book. Is there anything that kind of feels like this music? And then we try to match things up. Other times, we have our one of our vocalists, Troy, we can be playing something really cool, and he just on the spot just sings lyrics with a melody he's inventing on the spot. And I'll listen to the recordings later, and I'll say, man, this is the basis for our song, and we write it from there. So
we record every practice.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. Well, Sex Robot Divas is a 5-piece group, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And are you all songwriters?
I would say yes, absolutely. Okay. Our cousin Dustin, he drums, and he's been not only, helping write songs for years, but he's taken it and written some lyrics of his own and said, hey, what can we do with this? Our bass player, Paul's writing some lyrics and stuff like that. And everybody contributes to the music, the writing of the music itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the song we just heard, that is going to be featured Saturday in your show?
Yes, and I'll be playing some keys with it as well.
Okay, so for the live show on Saturday at the Acorn, you're going to bring the guitar, you're going to bring piano, and we're going to...
I'm going to bring two, actually.
Yeah.
Because I'll bring my electric guitar, too. So
we have some pieces that are going to need the electric guitar. Yeah. So.
Excellent. Well, you know how great that room sounds. You guys have played there.
Yeah, just a couple months ago, we were the hosting band for the open mic, so it was wonderful.
See, did you work with Evan?
Yes.
Evan's amazing, isn't
he?
I love working with him.
Yes.
And so he knows what to expect when you guys walk in the door.
Well, I mean, it'll be a little different with just us here.
Yeah, we're going to be a little easier on him because just a few inputs.
Don't like that.
Well, we showed up the first time. He was kind of shocked at, because everybody sings. So everybody needs a mic.
Five mics.
My cousin Troy, he has congas. He has organ. He's got a piano, and sometimes he's going to dabble. He dabbles in guitar a little bit. He plays drums, in addition to singing. So he alone, I think, needed 5 inputs.
Wow.
Yeah, we take up a lot of board space.
I didn't see a website, but I know you're on Facebook. If you go to Sex Robot Divas on Facebook, there's a couple of pictures there and some information, but I do see a lot of YouTube stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like you guys have a lot of stuff posted.
I work on it. I need to work a little bit better on it, but yeah, I do post some stuff and just random videos behind some of our recordings that we do in the basement.
So these aren't really live videos then?
There are some live
okay.
Yes, there are actually. So there's a live video. There's a few live videos on there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and again, that's Sex Robot Divas. The band will not be there on Saturday. It'll just be Matt and Stephanie. But you're going to hear live versions of Sex Robot Divas songs. Are all the songs you're playing from the band's catalog, or are you guys doing any kind of separate solo stuff?
Strange Love.
Strange Love is from the Sex Robot Divas.
We collaborated on that one, yeah.
So the rest of them are actually every one that I wrote that they collaborated with me.
Okay.
So we had the 35 minutes, so we're going to do 8 songs will be what I wrote, and 2 of them they haven't collaborated with, but we're going to, especially after practicing them together, and then one of them will be from the Sex Robot Divas.
Now, how do you know if a song you write is suited for the band? A lot of times there's different songwriters, and some songs fit a band's format and some don't. To not box yourself in the corner and say, I have to write this way so the band will play it. How do you guys decide if a song one of you writes is perfect for the band or should be kept for a side project or another group?
That's a great question.
I personally, just because I like to do the open mic thing, if I write a song, I do it at an open mic, and I depend on what the audience feedback is. And if I get really good feedback, which that means when the audience gets silent,
okay,
I usually feel like that's a good song to be able to put a band to it, you know, and make sure it's something. But we've learned just practicing this past couple of weeks that there's some changes in some of our songs we do with the band that we're kind of excited to share with the band Friday, like this Friday.
Okay. What's Friday?
Band practice. Every
oh,
Friday.
Band practice. Okay. I thought there was another gig. Let's plug
no.
that. Now, are you going to sing, Matt? You mentioned off-air that sometimes you sing.
I sing.
I don't know if you were serious or...
I with the band, I sing two
oh,
songs.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But
I,
you're not singing
Saturday?
And
you harmonize. Saturday?
Every once in a while, I'll throw a harmony in there.
Yes. He harmonizes.
Only on the third Tuesday of every month.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, but, I won't be singing on Saturday.
Okay. How many songs do you guys have? As far as if you had to say, we've got X amount of songs in our catalog that we are comfortable, that are finished, that we can play out and or would record.
30 to 40,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
30 to 40.
Yeah. If we dug in deep, we could probably dig up maybe 50, you know, that, but we'd be stretching it, you know, with stuff.
The complete
that,
30, 40, you know, for sure.
Some stuff we've discarded over the years and we found it didn't work well. We liked it, but that wasn't so palatable to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So we have stuff that's, you know, we've grown out of and evolved from and stuff like that.
They had a song that was something they never even showed me. And one time they just invited me to their Dropbox files and I was going through it and I'm like, why don't we do this song? This is amazing. And it totally transformed into like kind of something else. And people love it now. So, yeah, we have a good amount of songs. All original, too.
Now you mentioned playing in Highland. Where'd you play?
We were an opening act along with a couple other bands for Jerrica.
Oh, okay.
At the Shoe Horseshoe.
Silver Dollar.
Silver Dollar.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, which is now The Room.
Oh.
They've changed that over on Indianapolis Boulevard.
Correct.
Right on the highway. Yeah,
right,
it's called The Room now.
So we played over there. We were part of a show over there that we did.
Usually she has only country acts with her most of the time. So were you doing a little more of the twangier stuff that
that's
day?
That's very shocking because it was all hard rock. Besides,
really?
Like, it was all like hard.
A lot of her shows, it's like a lineup of country troubadours.
Yeah, I think she was the only country
actor. She was the only country actor. It was like rock.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't think she knew until she showed up.
Oh, my God, there's rock people here. So... How often do you get to play out? Again, you're in an area that doesn't support original music that much. And I'm assuming you all have day jobs. So it's hard to travel to places that are open.
Yeah.
Do you do any Chicago dates? I know they're very open to music there.
Not yet, but that is definitely one of my goals. I met some people kind of out west in Reno that were talking to me, and they're like, you guys are so great. Like, I don't know why you guys haven't ventured out to Chicago. So... the day job, that's the thing about musicians and any musician, and you would know too because you work with them all the time as well, is that you have to make time to play out. And when you do have those day jobs, it can be exhausting staying out till 10, 11 o'clock, midnight. So, but we still get stuff. I mean, like, we're going to do this show with you. And I think right now, like, I try to stay on top of it when it comes to open mics. And recently, I know Matt's really excited about starting to do some because that's such a great way to get original music and musicians and bands to be able to find shows to do.
Are you finding more people want to network that are like-minded, that have their own original, say we should do something as a unit, strength in numbers?
That does come up when we end up at places with other original artists. But one of the things that's kind of holding us back is the lack of material to provide for the audience. We don't have, you know, an album. We don't have songs that you can go and listen to on Spotify or, you know, download from iTunes or anything like that. And so really what we're in kind of in the last maybe 6 months has been a phase of trying to solidify those pieces and put together a small package of songs that we can use to market ourselves.
Okay.
Because that's been our... You know, we've really just done a lot of playing and writing and you know, not very much marketing. And, you know, that's not our forte right there, you know.
Yeah. You mentioned getting together 3 years ago when the two of you got together. But I've got to wonder where the seed was planted. Ladies first, Stephanie, how did you come to music? What drew you to music that you said, this is going to be a big part of my life?
So both my mother and my father is music. My mom played the piano and she was not going to let any of us kids not play an instrument. Mm-hmm. And so my family, which is very rare, it's just like his family. And it's his family is the first family I've met. It's like mine is that usually you come about a family that has like one or two musicians. My entire family, the Daisy family in LaPorte, Indiana, are all musicians. My dad's a drummer. Like, you go to my family get-togethers, there's like a drum set up, four guitars, two keyboards, a ukulele. There's singers all over the place. Matt's family is the same way. Like, his aunt, she traveled with Patsy Cline and went across seas with Loretta Lynn and sang. And, like, his cousin's a drummer.
What was it called when they went to Vietnam music. To do the...
The USO tour?
Mm-hmm. She did. My Aunt Janice did the USO tour. She was on the Hee Haw Show.
Okay.
And so mm-hmm. I grew up watching bands with her. And, of course...
Is she from here, too?
She's from South Bend also, mm-hmm. yeah. And then, you know, of course, I have nephews and, mm-hmm. And cousins that play music. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just like her family, we... You know, get together.
And it's weird because you invite people to your get together and, like, no, like, it's serious. Like, we don't play cards and, like, just roll dice. Like, this is a concert. Just wait till you come. And no one ever believes it until they come and how many musicians are in the family. Like, it's astonishing, actually. It's really cool. So, yeah, my, it was great because I was just traveling. I went to Ireland. I just got back mm-hmm. and I was telling my sister because she's a musician as well. And I said, one of the best gifts that's ever been given to me is that I'm a musician. And if you're not a musician, you'll never know how it feels to have that music run through your blood. Like, it's
very well put.
Yeah.
That's something that, you know, a lot of kids, they are told you have to sit there. You can't play baseball. You got to practice. And so many kids turn away from it. And I hear that from people that say, I wish I would have stuck with it. Yeah, it was fun to play baseball for that year, but I wish I would have stuck with mm-hmm. it because I'd have it now. Were you one of those kids that didn't want to practice, but mom stood over and said, you're going to?
Once I got kind of cool in school, I didn't want to. I didn't want to. Like, I fake sicked to go to piano lessons. I'm pretty sure I got in trouble in orchestra class because I played the violin for about 6-7 years. One of my best friends played the cello in there, so I'm glad we were so far separated on the orchestra. But there were times where you didn't want to. But I also let go of music for a very long period of time, like him. And when you pick it back up, you'll never let it back again. Like, you'll never let it go again. So, yeah, I was one of those kids at a certain point in my life.
What made you step away and what brought you back to it?
What made me step away was... I was kind of out on my own for a small period of time when I was younger. So just trying to get through life at a teenager age, because I was pretty much a parent to myself by the time I was 14 until now. So there was a time in my life when I finally kind of got my stuff together and I was sitting there and it just came back to me. I got to keep someone, a bass player down in Florida when I lived there, was like, do you want this keyboard? And I'm like, yeah, I do want that keyboard. And he tried to give it to me for free, but I still gave him the $100. And I just kept that keyboard until last year. It just broke. And I started writing all my songs again. And it's such a great feeling to be back. And there were so many things from the time you were a teenager. And I'm pretty sure I let go of music for a good 7 years before I picked it back up.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Ever miss the violin? 7 years, a long time to play an instrument.
I do miss the violin. Yes.
Any chance you're going to hear you play it someday again?
I have some nerve damage in my
hand. How'd you get the nerve damage?
I might have danced on a bar in Vegas and threw my elbow up into a ceiling fan.
It might have happened.
And I cut my ulnar nerve.
Oh, no.
So I have a little nerve damage, but I can still, like, I can strum. I can play a couple little minimal songs on the guitar and stuff like that. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Matt, what about you? Obviously, you got the DNA in you, but what made you want to pursue this professionally? And at what age?
I had a lot of admiration for one of my older cousins, my Aunt Janice's son. And he was drumming since as long as I can remember. And, you know, I got my musical influences from him as a young person. And I wanted to play guitar. I wanted to be like Black Sabbath and mm-hmm. Motley Crue and, you know, those guys.
You wanted the girls to scream.
Yeah, I wanted that. And then as I got older and... You know, I got more proficient in the guitar, and I started to understand the difference between the different genres of music and mm-hmm. started to evolve my musical interests. You know, I began to expand on the guitar, and this, as long as I can remember, I've just always wanted to start an original band and, You know, when I met the Grateful Dead, then I wanted it to be improvisational.
You met the
not oh, personally you, when okay. I discovered.
I was
going to
say, what nuggets of knowledge did they give you?
But when I discovered the Grateful Dead, you know, after that, I wanted everything I did to be improvisational and original, which, you know, that kind of gives the makes it so there's like 5% of the musicians around that are even interested in talking to you.
And
so,
and less of percent to listen to it in the audience.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Definitely. But yeah, that's where, you know, my influences arise from. The drive, you know, I don't know. When I was young, it was just guitar. And as I got older, I really began to, in my, you know, mid-20s, I guess, I began to really appreciate songwriting. And, you know, my early attempts at songwriting were terrible. I still look back at them and, you know, I enjoy reading through them. But, you know, just sticking with it over the years, my real love is the writing of the song and performing it, you know.
Okay.
It's not necessarily being the guitar player that that drives me anymore. It was when I was young, I wanted to be Yngwie Malmsteen, you know.
Million notes a minute.
Yeah.
We're talking with Matt and Stephanie. They are members of Sex Robot Divas. Together, they're going to do a duo show this Saturday, July 13th at 8 p.m. Disregard the flyer if you got an earlier flyer that said 7:30. It's 8 p.m. They'll be starting things off at the Acorn Theater, and that's in Three Oaks, Michigan. And let's play another song. You're listening to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. This is Midwest Beats. I'm Tom Lounges, and we're going to get another original tune out of these fine folks, and maybe something you'll hear on Saturday. We'll find out.
So this one actually is called Walk Away.
Have you ever had someone that makes you want to walk away? I want to know, have you ever had someone that makes you want to walk away? And you will with pride. You did not come and break my heart. I gave you a piece from the starting, and do you see you'll thank me? And do you, yeah, you'll thank me as I walk away? Yeah, yeah, as I walk away? Yeah, yeah. You know, love, see, it's hard to find. I bet you're thinking, I wish she was mine. And do you see you'll thank me? Do, yeah, you'll thank me as I walk away. Yeah, 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 as I walk away. Yeah, yeah. I gave you sunshine when you saw the rain. I showed you laughter when you felt pain. I showed you the stars in the sky, hoping that you'd always be mine. With love so, so precious, so true, until the day I knew I had to leave you. And do see, you'll thank me. And do, yeah, you'll thank me as I walk away. Yeah, 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 as I walk away. You'll thank me for all the kisses and hugs. You'll thank me now cause you don't get enough. You'll thank me for always giving you away. But most of all, you'll thank me for the love that I gave in. And do you see, you'll thank me. And ooh, 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 yeah, you'll thank me as I walk away. As I walk away. As I walk away. As I walk away.
Thank you.
Is that an older one or a new one?
That's an older one. We do that fully with the band. It's real nice.
It's the first time we've done it just acoustically.
Yes.
Okay. Will that be on Saturday's bill?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Who inspired your vocal style? Everyone emulates somebody when they first start doing anything that they pursue. I had certain writers I would emulate when I was starting as a journalist. I had certain radio guys I would try to sound like. Everyone has that hero that they aspire to be. Who did you look to when you said, I want to be a singer? I want to be like her. Who was her?
So I never... It's funny, we were talking about this question earlier about who inspires you. So I read that they say if you answer nobody, you're delusional. And
I would have to agree with that.
But I feel like I disagree in a way because I never wanted to really be a singer. I just wanted to be like a songwriter. And so I would just like slowly just like write songs like when I was in fifth grade about my cat. And, you know, then I would start singing songs. But when you're so young, like I didn't really, I mean, I only listened to this music my parents would play because back then, you know, you didn't have your own music, your own cell phone. Like you had to listen what was on
the house
on a tape or a vinyl, and it was Led Zeppelin or, you know, CCR. And I mean, those are the only things that I listened to. But like the style of my voice, that just came in with time of what I heard that was good. Like it took me a long time to find where I was at. And so there was times where I thought I was country, or there was times that I would try this high voice, low voice, whatsoever. And then one day I was like, I'm such a soulful blues singer that I never knew that I really had when I was younger versus when I started playing with them.
You have a lot of soul in your voice.
And I didn't know that until probably when I was able to give up my keys at sometimes and like really listen to the voice. That's when I kind of learned where my calling was. And it really wasn't inspired by someone. It was like really finding out how you are as a musician. And it's funny I say that because there's times when like our band plays together and like let's say someone has like a note and I hear such a wrong note. And I'm like, how do you not know that that doesn't sound bad? Like that sounds bad. And it took me so many years to find my calling because, and I think it's because I was able to kind of let go of my instrument because I'm so used to doing my own. And I found it then. So really, I don't think it was like inspired by someone. It was the feeling. It's the feeling that you get when you finally are like, I feel it. Like nothing's
all right. Let me
that.
Turn that question around a little bit and say, who are some of the singers that you have that you feel are the most passionate, the most on the same wavelength you are when it comes to delivering that kind of emotional feel?
Some of the singers that I really like, I do really like Stevie Nicks. I like some of her music, her band's music, actually. Janis Joplin, her performance, when I watched her documentary, like, and just her performance and who she is and the thought of disappearing on stage when you get up there, adore that. I mean, that is exactly what it is. Like, for the longest time, I had such stage fright. And when you get on stage, you have to remember that no one else out there is up on the stage doing what you're doing. You're doing that for them. And you get to make that stage yours. And she just disappeared. And I feel like when I get with the band, there's some songs, you know, I don't have to play keys. And I just get to disappear just like her. So definitely Janis Joplin. I know it sounds crazy, but, like, soulful-wise, like, I think the strength of Whitney Houston is amazing. Like, I think sometimes she's forgotten about, but she has such a strong, bold, soulful, and very organic. Like, she makes it look so easy. And when you sing, it should be easy. It should be easy. You should not have to try to sing. It should just come, and you should feel it.
Well, when you played at the store that day, the first thing I said to Jerry is that she's got a Joplin-esque kind of quality to her. Not that you were derivative in any way or sounded like her, but it was, I think, getting into that bubble. It was like we disappeared and you were there in that moment with your piano and we were just flies on the wall.
I
and that's kind of the feeling I got watching you.
I do get that a lot, Janis Joplin. And everyone says, I'm like, if Janis Joplin and Tori Amos like came together, was me.
That's you. You're the love child. What about, and not again, not stylistically, but you remind me in some ways with your songwriting, perhaps, and the fact that you play piano, of Carole King. I have so much respect for Carole King.
I do too.
And I think that you are maybe this generation's version of someone like her.
That's interesting.
Your songs are powerful. They're emotive. That's, you know, interesting. There's a lot of passion. There's a lot of emotiveness, emotion in it. I just think her songs, like You Feel the Earth Move, you know, is a strong song. And that was soulful. She didn't sing it quite as soulful as you would or some of the other artists, but I feel that that is a parallel as well. I mean,
thank
I'm just
that.
Throwing that out there.
No, thank you for that. And I can see that. I mean, she does. She has a lot of moving songs, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As a songwriter, Matt, what about you? Who inspired you to write, and when did you? You said you started writing early on, but was it a cat that inspired you?
No, it was, you know, first off, listening to the great lyrics from Black Sabbath and thinking, wow, these guys, he's writing these dark.
Iron Man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was still, you know, dark and, you know, scary to at least when I was younger, the adults.
So were you a
time.
Rebel child? Is that what you were?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
We share that in common, actually. Yeah. Okay. Even though he's a little bit older than me, we kind of have the same teenage path.
Yeah.
Okay.
The thing is their songs were, you know, if just on the surface you would think, well, these guys are just writing about crazy stuff, but it was really deeply political and a commentary on you know, society in general. And a lot of people kind of miss that about, you know, that era of music, you know, especially the heavier bands, you know, until the heavier bands basically embrace, I mean, up until maybe the end of the 80s. When the heavy bands started to embrace the social messages and get away from the pyrotechnics and the flamboyancy and that kind of stuff. And then later on, it was, you know, Robert Hunter of the Grateful Dead, you know, has written some of the best lyrics ever written by anyone. You know, very deep, very insightful, and often relevant to, you know, more than just the author. You know, that's why I like songs where, you know, people argue about, no, this song's, you know, it's about this situation in my life. It's exactly what he said. Oh, no, that's not what they're talking about this.
It's and, open to interpretation.
Know. Yeah, and then you ask the author and
it's nothing at all like that.
Yeah, you're wrong.
That's like Dylan songs. Everyone has their own thought on what it means.
Yeah.
And there's no right or wrong.
And I like to, you know, as artists, I like to say, well, what does it mean to you? I mean, you know.
It's like a painting on the wall.
Yes.
It's interpretive.
It's
you
interpretive,
know? What does
absolutely.
That Picasso mean?
Yeah. And the more you narrow the idea of a song down for the audience, I think the less credit you give the audience for being able to think for themselves, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't tell them exactly what it is. I mean, sometimes you do. Sometimes your chorus is the exact meaning of your song. You know,
right.
I mean, it's inevitable, but. You know, I love the art of the clever wording of lines and things like that. And you know, like Sting. I love Sting, how he's capable of putting words in songs. Like he's got the word Neanderthal in a song, you know. And I'm like, how did he think that would work? And then, man, he pulled it off so stylistically. I love that, you know. I mean, so, you know, I love the craft of it and the cleverness of it and the messages, too, you know. People are often more receptive to the things you say if they don't realize you're saying them until they're singing them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? There you go. A lot of times you don't know what you're singing.
You don't, yeah, that's true.
And then you find out the lyrics.
Yeah,
and it's like, oh, I was way off base on that. It was about a dog. I thought it was about a girl.
That's right, yeah.
So
the band thought that about the first song we collaborated with on mine. It was Bury Me, and it wasn't until last year we were trying to do like a deep dive into recording it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, so what guy is this about? And I'm like, it's about life. And I'm like, did you listen to the lyrics? Like, that's like for life. Like, wait a minute, you guys thought I was Taylor Swift and every song I write is about a guy? Like, no, this is about life.
That one is on YouTube, by the way. It's sitting here right in front of me.
It's
Sex
a phenomenal
Robot Divas
song.
Bury Me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's very bluesy. It's
that's
a phenomenal
the, that,
song.
That and Venom, which, you know, we'll play that Saturday night, but those are the ones that grabbed me when she first.
Are those the ones that are 90s grungish?
No, those are
okay.
Bluesy.
Those are more the songs that we've written recently.
Okay,
yeah,
because the band itself has a lot of different influences. Our drummer, you know, he's if it's not heavy, you got to convince him, you know, to check it out, you know, and our bass player, you know, Kiss is his favorite band, and you know his roots are along those lines, and you know so. You know, all of us bring those elements, and as a, you know, kind of the guy trying to organize this, I really like to see all of the elements that the individual musicians bring. I like to see them used and exploited, if you will. And, you know, I mean, there's, you know, valid
bring
stuff.
All the toys in the toy box out.
Bring all of them, yeah.
Yes, please.
Excellent, excellent. What is next for yourselves? Are you going to do more of these duo shows now that you've rehearsed it? And what's next for the band?
It's funny you say that because we were just talking about this yesterday together, and I think that we want to kind of go out and do some playing, even if we can't get the whole band out. We're definitely gonna, you know, see what you know, members of the band, we can get out and start doing some marketing. We need to concentrate on our marketing, and that's what we're going to do.
And recording. We need to lay down at least, you know, 13 tracks, maybe 10.
Good recordings.
And make them available to the public in a way that's, you know, not hard to find, or not, you know, navigating through our Facebook page to find that one post.
So are you a fan of the online music services versus printing up physical copies, either vinyl or CD?
Well, that's tough. I mean, you know, I nostalgia wise, you know, I love the old days. Of course, once Napster hit, you know, I was right in there, you know, getting as large a collection of songs as I could on my computer, you know, and so, you know, at the same time, you know,
you kind of have to go with the generation.
You have to go with what's happening now.
Sadly, but true, like, it's really tough on musicians now because. Right. Selling albums is...
It's easier,
when you have
though.
Spotify, when you have Pandora, when you have, you know, SoundCloud, it's just like it's all right there. So, and it is easier.
But it's easier for the musician. It's not as much investment. And when you finish a song and you say, I'm happy with it, 5 minutes later it's uploaded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, easier. You can get instant gratification.
Yeah. Yes.
So, we've got about 5 minutes left. Is there anything we haven't talked about? I want to get to another song.
Well, I mean, no, I'm just kidding.
The meaning of life.
I can talk to you up all night. I would like to say I'm really, I'm definitely grateful that we get to do this. And I also am so excited to meet Mojo and the band. I think the history behind, you know, with Muddy Waters, it's so great to know that as well. And that he's trying to carry that on. And I want to thank you as well for inviting, you know, myself into this, because it's kind of like, to me, it's those accomplishments, those small goals that you continue to fight for and you know you believe in. And to have other people like you believe in people like myself or Matt and whatsoever is just such a great compliment. So thank you as well.
Yeah. You can thank me by never playing Brown Eyed Girl.
Yeah. Promise you won't.
Put
that
in blood.
Yeah.
All right, let's do another song, our final song today. This is, again, Matt and Stephanie. They are members of Sex Robot Divas. I'll get it right yet. And they'll be performing as a duo, opening things up on Saturday, July 13th at the Acorn Theater, a beautiful venue if you've never been there, next to the Journeyman Distillery. And that's in Three Oaks, Michigan. Don't let the Michigan address fool you. It's only about 40 minutes from Northwest Indiana. And again, a beautiful place. So let's do it to it. A final song. What are we playing?
So this is called Done. We've never played it out for anyone, not even the band. Wrote it kind of a long time ago. So a little bit of country-ish kind of sounding, but a little bluesy maybe. So we'll see.
All right.
I came back in my life. We both seen light. Nothing skipped, not even a beat missed. We are one of a kind, but all I got is your picture while she's gone, you. And every day I wake up wishing I was loving someone special like you. You say, darling, please don't wait, but you whisper, don't let me go. But I am real, baby, and I am here, baby. How long do I have to know that all I got is your picture while she's gone, you? And every day I wake up wishing I was loving someone special like you. And today I finally realize, and today I open my eyes, and I'm done talking about it, and I'm done dreaming about it, and I'm done wishing for you, and I'm done having no clue, and I'm done riding you back, and I'm done being yours, like, and I'm done staying in love with the one you gave her a start, 'cause I'm done having your picture. She's gone, you. And every day I wake up, wishing I was loving someone special. But I'm done talking about it, and I'm done dreaming about it, and I'm done wishing for you, and I'm done having no clue, and I'm done writing you back. Done being your snack, and I'm done stay in love with the one you gave her a start, 'cause I'm done having your picture. Oh, well, she's got you.